Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
In the next hour with you, with questions and also as an attempt to keep you up to date as much as possible. So we will come in and tell you things that happened the very day of the show and its recording. But for those of you that are not already doing so, please follow along on our blog day by day, because it is the main way that we have to keep you updated and abreast of things as they happen. So sometimes very large things happen pertaining to the way as light workers we live our lives. And as it happens, as the infinite places these things into the laws of existence, that's the day or the next day that you will see it on the blog. And also, we keep you updated when we do pre-records and various things like that if you join us on Twitter. And now, Rogier, is it my understanding that we don't have to actually have people be a member of Twitter to be able to access my page each day?
No, I mean, anyone can just look at it. It's just much easier to be a member simply because you can kind of keep track of, let's say, fellow students as well and have a kind of more interconnected web, so to speak. But yeah. Essentially, you can access the page without being a member.
And how do they access the Twitter page?
It's on twitter.com/Almeen.
All right. Okay, well, thank you again for being with us today, Rogier. And what questions did you have?
Well, let's start with a question from Jennifer. And I would actually like to add that I'm very pleased with the masters that have sent in their questions through Twitter. It's very, very good. Anyway, her question is, in our daily round, what can we do as masters to calm the compulsion to know and do and live more in the moment?
Okay. The compulsion to know and do that the master Jennifer from New York is referring to, my brothers and sisters, it can become very addictive. But the masters, the very term mastery, means that our life is lived in dynamic balance. And sometimes it is a matter of perception that changes a habit like that, but it also is a matter of just really taking time each day to listen to our heart. You see, for us to be burst out of this dream state that we have found ourselves in as a cosmos, it took some momentum. According to what Mother said on one of our previous radio shows, I forget which one it is, might be 3 weeks ago, but she said that multiple times before, we had lived in the dream with pleasant emotions. In fact, she said that there were 96 pleasant emotions that were attempted during the dream with the hope that we would eventually be able to wake up from the dream, and most importantly, that the Infinite Mother would find a way to bring the dream images that she had created, namely the creations of life, the first individuations ever took place in the dream, but she would find a way to bring it out of the dream and be able to wake up. The pleasant emotions kept us dreaming quite happily. It took a rather nightmarish situation for us to want to wake up. And so for the first time, up until August of 2006, and for eons before, growth through opposition took the place. And the opposition was heaped especially on light workers, because it was discovered that they would be, of course, the quicker method to turn the unknown into the known through experience. In other words, if something bad happened to someone unconscious, they do nothing with it except feel victimized. If something bad happened to a master, they would find every possible insight that they can about it. They would realize which portions of themselves it was signaling that they needed to change, and they would change it. They are the ones that could the quickest way turn this opposition into experiential knowledge. So we were really the martyrs. For eons of existence, the light workers were the martyrs in that, you know, the painful situations were given to them. Now, we needed the momentum of a great deal of doingness and a great deal of knowingness to get out of the dream. As ascended masters, we need to now get to know ourselves better, because life's purpose has changed. The purpose is adoration in action. It also is to delight and be delighted. We won't know what delights us until we know what makes us our hearts sing. It is time now to get to know ourselves. So, A, it takes a definite understanding. Most habits change through perception. Most negative emotions change through perception. So we need the necessary perception to say, phew, I can now let my hair down, I can relax. Secondly, it will take a definite rescheduling of our lives. I have worked, my gosh, day and night since Mother called me to gather what she called her major light workers on earth, which is the pillars of the temple, since February of 2005. Before that, as a Toltec Nagual, I was just simply working with the apprentices and leading them into freedom from mortal boundaries. But it was pleasant. It was far more relaxed. And then this hectic work. Now I have to actually make the firm decision that I will not let the work dictate my life anymore. It's never ending. There's always things you need to find. But need to? No. You can find. Life is now no longer filled with unknown, because it now is rather that it's filled with a discovery. And the discovery is the discovery of self. And we discover self by discovering it externally or in the quiet times that we get to know ourselves. So it takes the firm decision, number two. And then number three is that it takes scheduling it. Do you know that for the first time, Mother has said to me, you absolutely may not teach this next part the way you have taught your other parts. And I said, what's the matter with my other parts? And because, see, I'm in about a week, we're pre-recording this, but in the beginning of December 2008, I have a December class. And I have used my classes in the following way: to give vast perception to create huge emotional changes. Mother wants that done differently. The perception to yield emotion is one way of doing it. Then there also is emotion to yield perception, another way of doing it. But the one is feminine, the other one is masculine. We're in a place of androgynous life where there is really no gender. There just is whatever role you wish to play. There's going to be a vast difference, and to tell you the truth, if I think about it, which I don't, because it's not the way to do it, but I get a little nervous about this upcoming part, because I know that years of teaching I have to throw out the window. It's like nothing I've done ever before, and my usual way of doing it simply is not going to work. So, yep, a little bit of trepidation here, but that's what I would recommend.
Well, it is interesting that you would talk about, the perception and then emotional healing and then sort of give the possibility of doing it the other way around, and it seems to be kind of in line with my assessment that your teaching, or let's say the way pods usually occur, are seem to be primarily very much, maybe even polar, over-polarized into light, into very, very high perception thing, and then the emotion comes later. Actually, that may not be exactly correct, but it just seems like there is a, it's more about perception than about emotion.
It had to be, because in addition, during the last month, every single pod for the last 14 pods has generated a body of information. The bodies of information are the websites. We brought in alchemy, we brought in divine architect, the ancient shamanism, we brought in the earth chronicles, the history of the earth, the new earth languages, we brought in the white magic, the angelic kingdoms, the higher levels that are now staying around the earth so that people can access them. So every single one of those weeks, like the last week that I did, was the Toltec Nahual, information of immortality. For the, you know, I've spoken about immortality as a reality, but to actually give the techniques that the old Toltecs had, we've never done that before. So every week has brought in one of those websites. Now they're complete. And, you know, now we don't need to do that anymore. But that, too, is not an accident.
Okay, well, it's interesting to see where this is going to go then next week.
Yes.
Well, could you actually, just to come back to this, do you think the compulsion to know and do is also linked to this this tendency to very much look outside and to sort of expect things to come in from the outside?
It's the tendency to expect things to come in from the outside. It also is absolute eons of programming that truth is hard won instead of self-evident moment by moment. So we think we have to suffer to get it. It also is simply that we become identified by what we do rather than by who we are. You know, and ultimately there is no identity, but our individuation, we identify it by what it does rather than by what it is. And so that is another part of it. The other part of it is that we are unfamiliar with silence, with aloneness, with taking the simple pleasures of life as important spiritually. So we're unfamiliar in many instances how to do it. You know, I mean, my beautiful one there that sent in the question, the beautiful master from New York, she's in New York. So to find the silence of deep, meaningful living takes a lot more effort when you've got traffic noise and everything else outside your window. So it takes cultivating a lifestyle that incorporates it. The other thing is programming. We have social conditioning that has programmed us to say that says that something only has worth when it's experientially understood. That's part of the Toltec knowledge, that, you know, that experiential knowledge is the best that you can get. It's the best teaching. But it says also with programming that we have to become, we have to learn, linear becoming. And so we always are looking for what is our next step instead of saying, I've arrived. So linear becoming had to go out the window, and it did in August of 2006, which you can read about in The Ring of Truth. But programming plays a large part of it.
So, and I suppose it also involves the programming, which is simply unaccustomed to this idea of richness of inner life. Would that be correct?
Yes, and you know, Rogier, now that you point that out, there's another issue, and that is that we have thought that if we are doing, we are needed. Many who do not have self-knowledge live hollow lives of service. Because without that self-knowledge, there's no self-love. And with the self-love gone, we then settle for feeling needed. So in other words, we see our value by doing for others. We see it as selfish by bringing wholeness to ourselves. But that is incorrect perception, because all others thrive when we are home for ourselves. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
A Life in Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back. And here, I think I've got that one about covered, so I'm happy to move on to the next.
Okay, well, let's see. First of all, I thought I'd had an all of Hong Kong's questions, but there was one more. Let me just look that one up later. First of all, because I can't find it now, but first of all, Lale, I'm hoping I pronounced that correctly, but from Paris, has a number of interesting questions about the emotions and, I think, relating to Belvaspita. So I'll just sort of articulate them for you. So she says, in one of the last posts on the blog, Almin mentioned that all pairs have now become one, the adoration of the infinite. Does that mean that instead of pulsing emotions when in expansion, we can now only focus on the adoration of the mother? And that's the question. Or do we still need to pulse each pair of emotion?
When those pairs of emotions, in other words, my brothers and sisters, what you hear is referring to, plus our beautiful master from Paris, she has asked, look, in the healing modality of Belvaspita, which you can find on www.almeenhealing.com, and you can also see before and after photographs of 12-minute healings on a few subjects. I think I put two in there, or three subjects. So it's of great use to take a peek at that. But it works with the pairs of emotions, and you internalize those pairs of emotions, and you understand how they work together. Think of those emotions as doorways into a single room. There might be a total of 20, well, let's make it 12 doors. Each of them is half a door that has a two-way swing, so that it can go one way and it can go the other way, but it has 12 doorways around the room. You can use each one of those pairs of emotion to understand the adoration of the infinite. Let's take love. If we can understand the perfection with which life unfolds, if we see it in the way the seasons change, if we see it in the way that wildlife flourishes in the short springs of the tundra, or the birds migrate on their course to the south in the sun, as we see that, the love for us grows for the mother. If our love grows for the mother, we know that we are always sustained by loving arms that lift us up and over. If even that which we fear as the worst, which I hope there's no fear left in those that are listening, but if we fear the worst, even as we attract it into our life, those loving arms are there to lift us up and over. That brings trust. So we can take a pair of emotions like that, still work with it as a doorway into the infinite. Now, if Belvaspata masters don't know this, because we have masters all over the earth, Russia, everywhere, if they don't know this and they do it just the way we say, Mother has already written it into the laws of existence that Belvaspata's methods will change, will stay absolutely unchanged and effective no matter how much the cosmos changes. We spoke last week about the fact that so many mystical traditions are obsolete. They were wonderful when they were based on the correct things. There are vast healing modalities out there that still works with healing energies and symbols that pull in those healing energies. That worked phenomenally. In fact, the Belvaspata couldn't have worked before August of 2006. But the poles in the cosmos changed. In actual fact, something changed yet again, and I will write about it on my blog, and as we're pre-recording this, it will be written on the blog today. Something has yet again changed about the polarity in the cosmos, in that there isn't any. But nevertheless, that the correct principles will always replace the words as they're spoken by Belvaspata masters, because that healing modality is a gift from the mother. It's a gift to humanity, and it's a gift that will never be tainted, not even by the most dramatic changes in the cosmos, like waking up from the dream. So it works, and I checked it the minute I heard about that. I checked with Mother about Belvaspata. And they can still be used, and if you want to take it the next level so that there's more benefit of it for yourself, you use them as doorways to adoration.
But could we say then that the adoration of the infinite is really, I mean, we could just sort of stick to that and not sort of concern ourselves with the pairs of emotions?
No, we should understand those pairs of emotions, because it's like understanding the threads of a tapestry, even though the tapestry as a whole is a picture. We should understand them. Very good question, Rogier, that I omitted here. The reason being that each of those emotional pairs has its own sigil. And your understanding, if you take eggs and flour and milk and sugar and so on, you can make a wonderful cake from it. What you're doing as you're eating the cake, because you don't think of it as eating milk and flour and eggs, you think of it as eating cake. We've become cake in that they're no longer separate. But if you're very intuitive and very smart with your tongue, you can actually taste the egg taste in there, the milk taste in there. The tastes are in there. It's what combined makes the cake good. But we're dealing with cake. But by all means, you use the individual tastes, because they work with different ailments.
Okay, and then she also asks Lale from Paris if what this adoration of the infinite, if you can describe this feeling, because she says she can sense it, but it's still somewhat mysterious to her.
Oh, I'm so glad my sweetheart asked that, because you know what? I've never done that. And it's for me the same, And I'm hoping we're saying your name correctly, darling. Neither of us speak French very well, but in actual fact, I don't think your name was French. I think it meant tulip. It meant a flower name, and I think it was tulip. So anyway, the point of the matter is that adoration is the alchemical equation. See, this is helpful again because it tells us the ingredients of the cake, and adoration is the cake. So if you take love and praise and gratitude and you put all three of them together, that's when you end up with adoration in action. If you take light and love together, you end up with adoration. These are alchemical equations. And my brothers and sisters, for those of you that haven't tuned into previous shows, that aren't following us too regularly, we have spoken much about alchemy, and you can go to our website, which is wheelsofthegoddess.com. So www.wheelsofthegoddess.com. And on there you can understand that to do alchemy, you need a knowledge of the equations. We're going to discuss this as an equation of alchemy, but understand that when you add things together alchemically, it's not the same as adding them together mathematically, because mathematically they only give you the sum of the total of the components. Alchemically, it's leveraged, and so it's like an arbitrage where you end up with a much bigger end result than the components that you added together. Love and praise and gratitude adds up to adoration. When you are, let's take love, praise, and gratitude. Now, first of all, I want to tell you that it's written out in detail. I wrote very in-depth view of love and praise and gratitude in the book Journey to the Heart of God. So I recommend that you folks take a little peek at that. All our books are electronically available, plus the brand new one, which is not yet even back from the printer until the beginning of 09. But it's Windows into Eternity, and it's up and ready for download. So if we have love and praise and gratitude together, we end up with adoration. But rightfully so, she wants to understand this adoration, and especially adoration in action. When you add up, when you have love and you have praise and you have gratitude, over time, it can be, if it is constantly engaged in, it will transfigure the body to an immortal master. And you can look at that in the back of Secrets of the Hidden Realms, where it gives the stages of man, and you can see how these ascension attitudes, which are mentioned in A Life of Miracles as well, brings you to that state. However, when you feel those three things together, you are immediately altering the body. It is immediate. Those three things together let's backtrack. If you have love and praise and gratitude, you have to constantly have one or the other. In our web professor that we have on the web professor, it's a web tutorial that we did for BBS Radio, you can find an entire section on ascension. And it speaks how love is better suited for certain stages of development, whereas gratitude and praise are better suited for other stages of man's development. They're easier to do. But you have to, whichever stage you're in and whichever one you choose, you have to constantly be doing it for a minimum of a few weeks. It takes layers and layers of transformation. That is the mathematical equation. If you have all three those attitudes together, you can transfigure your body that it becomes a new resonance. It becomes the resonance of the totality of all pure frequencies in the cosmos. You can transfigure your body within a matter of hours. It's the leveraging. When you live in adoration, you have become completely, fluidly open to the infinite beingness flowing through you. No obstruction is left. And when that is the case, let's look at the second part of the equation, in action. You will actually find that you are able to see exactly where you can best contribute to assisting life. It might be a smile to a stranger. It might be a reaching hand. It might be a dollar in somebody's hat on a street corner. It may be bringing somebody to the show. It might be calling a relative that and telling them that their life means something to you. But you will see your next step, and your life becomes one of service to the one life expressing as the many. So let us just take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Velvespada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. The world of mysticism is yet another reason to rejoice. Almeen has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
We're back now for our second half of the show. And, Ruchir, did I answer that one, or is there more to it?
I think you answered it, and we can go on to the next question. I just wanted to convey that Lale told us on Twitter that we did pronounce the name correctly, and it is Persian and means tulip, so you were correct.
Oh, that's so sweet. I thought it was Persian, but I wasn't quite sure. That is beautiful. I'm glad I remembered.
All right. Now, the question from Hong An that I was looking for, I found now, and it's this. Who are the Nordics? What star system are they from? Are they good, and or have they been part of the perpetrators and watchers?
Okay. Now, I have to really understand, first of all, what we mean by Nordics, because there are a couple of races that look very similar. One of those races is actually the Bek Bavarabishbi. And the Bek Bavarabishbi have pale, pale blonde hair. They all wear it sort of long onto the shoulder. They're very elongated bodies, epitome of refinement in their features and the way that they're built. And they're quite tall. And those are actually not star beings. They are here from Earth. They're called the Tree People, and you can see them written about in the Opening the Doors of Heaven. We described them, and they gave me their art as far back as 2005 because it had to go on these massive wheels within wheels that's spoken of in the Old Testament in Ezekiel, that Mother had me prepare to facilitate the opening of the membranes of the cosmos and for the ascension to take place. Thousands of symbols went on there of different races, and the Bet Bava Rabishbi came and gave their symbol and their artwork. And then, you know, when I recognized them, when they came back in, I believe, the beginning of 2007, they came out of hiding in a pocket of space. But they have been frequently interacting. They are masters at teleporting and appearing where they need it and disappearing. So many think of them and think of the Nordics. Then I have seen some, it's hard to explain location. If you were thinking of us in our old space, if you went through our sun, three suns ahead. Now, ahead means what? Ahead means octaves up in frequency. That's what it used to be. We have moved in a different space. The octaves of frequency have collapsed. But if in our old space, if you traveled through the sun and you went up three octaves in E frequency, you would find a solar system that had very tall, blonde people. They tended, however, to have brown eyes. I haven't met many of them, so I don't know if it's just an occasion that I've had a few of those that I've met. But they have white hair down to the shoulder. They're more muscular than the Bet Bava Rabishbi. There are tall, bluish color skin beings that have long, silky white hair, and they come from star systems in the Andromedan galaxy. Then we have ones that are not as tall. They're about 5'11". But they have long white hair. And I refer to them in the book Secrets of the Hidden Realms. They are able to teleport. They don't use spacecraft. And they actually came from the Antares star system, one of the planets in the Antares star system. So those are the ones with the long white hair that I've encountered.
Okay. I'm not entirely sure because of the multiple...
And sorry, Ruhir, the only people that I find gone of those groups I've mentioned, because you asked me whether they were gone or, you know, whether they were hostile to life, the only ones that I find that are gone are the ones from that third sun. They no longer exist. They succumbed to a rebelling against the mother. And I think that that happened in October of 2005.
Okay, now I'm not sure if this second follow-up question has been answered already or not, but she also asks if the tall blondes are Nordics or are they Pleiadians? If so, who are they and what has been their agenda or purpose on Earth?
The blondes?
The tall blondes.
The tall blondes? Well, again, see, I'm not entirely sure who we're talking about. What I can tell you about the Pleiadians, there are blonde people, but there are also people with dark hair. And there are Pleiadians that look like humans. And then there are Pleiadians that are a lot more etheric and tall. And then there are others that are more dense, but they look, the Pleiades is a large place. And they look, maybe like those that you'd get out of the Roswell crash, but a lot taller. They're not like 3 foot tall. They're taller. They're more like 5'10" or so. So I've seen different types of beings all coming from the Pleiadian star system. And a group of the Pleiadians in the star system are no longer there because they collaborated with the Greys in helping to abduct humans from Earth. There is, in fact, a lady here on in America that channels some Pleiadians, and the group she channeled came from, you know, collaborating with the Greys, and the Greys were very hostile to human life. But for the most part, the Pleiadians have been very benign, kind people. Their solution was to send over 1 million of their own kind in here to incarnate as humans. What it did is pollute the human grid, because the human is the archetype. And so Mother actually had to clean up that mess and put an end to other star systems, allowing their people to migrate into human bodies, into the Earth, because the humanity is so rare. They are the cradle of civilization. They hold all the DNA strands of all other races within them. They're like living genetic libraries. And so the point of the matter is that she gave them an option. Either they had to convert to becoming human, or they had to go home. So many of those people actually are major light workers that opted for being human, but they came from the Pleiades. And the reason she gave them that is that there was no harm intended. They intended to help us. And that was their way of helping. They're often musicians. They love artistic things. You know, but the major light workers that we're dealing with, even though they've been on the Pleiades, they originated on Earth, because the firstborn of the infinite in the dream originated on Earth. They then went to some other planetary systems and maybe made their way back. So even if there's a major light worker that used to be Pleiadian, they may originally have come from Earth anyway. Does that make sense? I hope so.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not really sure who else might qualify for the term Nordics. Just been thinking about that a little bit. Would you know?
Well, there are star beings that come in with silvery sort of jumpsuits, which is all in one, which are tall and blonde. But those are the ones that come, if you go through the sun, three suns beyond that. And that's, I don't know the name of that stellar system. So I cannot say that. They've come mostly to study. They've come to, you know, assist on Earth. Small colonies have sometimes been here. Mother has asked that all such colonies leave. So that is what we have. There was one such colony in the Mount Shasta area, and it was an underground colony. And I've seen it. There's like a lake underground, and then there's a tunnel that goes in, and it was just lit by itself. I've seen it in visions, but I had no business to go there. But they're not there anymore. But they came mostly to observe and to see what was transpiring.
Okay. Now, I have another question. I'm not entirely sure. Totally new question from the Master RJ, actually. But do we have enough time now? Or?
Yes, I think we do. Uh-huh.
Okay. He asks if we chose the memory implants that we've gotten, or were they from the Matrix? And he's referring to sort of recent memories, as in, say, the last decade.
Yes, very good question.
Uh-huh.
Because, yes, we chose it. See, because it's a yes and a no answer again. Yes, we chose the memories, but all life at that time was dictated by a Matrix. So with the Matrix, what we had is that Mother created the perfect Matrix. This is how life should be. The more life gets close to matching this Matrix, if there's enough of them there, it will transfigure to the next Matrix and life moves up. But, so all life was dictated by the Matrix. But within that, we chose them, and we chose them very distinctly for the following reason, and this is very interesting. You know what? Let's take a little commercial break, because it's better to do that now than interrupt myself again with a commercial break. But I'll tell you why we chose the memories we did. And for those that don't quite understand about this memory issue, my brothers and sisters, let me just say this. For all of us right now, we have memory implants. because all life only began when we exited the dream very recently in the winter of 2008. So that's when life began. So what about all those memories? Those are memories that came from the dream. The dream doesn't exist anymore. Even the dream space has been totally dissolved. So it didn't exist for all purposes of discussion for the new being that's formed, yet we have memories for the sake of continuity. Why do we have those specific memories? We'll talk about that when we get back from after these messages.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach, still fewer in the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Almin continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almin is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almin, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Just about 12 minutes left in our show, and I was going to speak a little bit. Ruchir, I think we were on why we manifested the memories we did. Is that right?
Yeah, and who or what created them, yeah.
Okay. My brothers and sisters of light, we have said that there were the major light workers on Earth were created first by Mother inside the dream when matrixes were created that ran basically gave the marching orders to life. So the light of the infinite shone through these beings, creating beyond them another layer, which is the rest of humanity, and then from humanity, all other star races were created. We are what the Andromedans call the Partal. We are the nobility. We are the original ones. They also said, we thought you were our wayward children and found you were our elders. So the lenses of creation had each within them unyielded potential. potential that would only be accessed when they reached levels at which they could cope with that potential. What was not understood at the time is that potential that has not yielded itself is like a black spot. Potential that has not yielded itself becomes actually illusion, in that it becomes the unknown, it becomes that which is a shadow within the light. So as the lens of the original creation shone through, making onto a screen, if you will, humanity, but humanity itself was a screen, and so the light, you know, was there, the shadows started to become really big, but now the light even shone through that to make the other races, and you end up with some really huge shadows cast across life. We decided to take that which was unsolved potential within our hearts, and we created within the dream, those of you that came in with memory implants, which is multiple times the case, for instance, the Ascended Masters of the Irish Order of the White Rose, and they have meetings three times a year, and you are very welcome to go to my classes there. They are most wonderful, hospitable masters. But the masters there, if you read in the back of the Isis book, Opening the Doors of Heaven, the master Joe explains that they came through a time tunnel that opened near Clonmacnoise, and that Isis herself closed it on the 29th of January 2006. All their lives are memory implants. I myself have that situation. So, Ruhir, you have that situation, really. So the point of the matter is that some of us already within the dream had memory implants. Now, we all do. In the dream, we created those memory implants to get rid of the occlusions of unmet potential so that it would yield its insights within our hearts so that the shadows could go away throughout all of existence. Because it was like the rings of a pebble into a pond that just kept getting bigger and bigger. That's how the shadows were, that were small bits of unyielded potential. Now that we're out of the dream, we are keeping simply the dreams, some of the dreams, memories. But you think you have all your life's memories. But I can absolutely assure you that that has been changed. We are not experiencing the same memories that were there before because a lot of them have been made easier, better. And that is the, you know, that is about how it came about.
When you say they've been made easier and better, what do you mean?
Well, let's say somebody went through horrible torture while being a soldier in Vietnam. They might not even remember having been captured. So pasts do change in some of the memories that we now have. It's made, it's ameliorated, it's made better.
Okay, and then what, because I'm not sure if this has been answered yet, but so what role then did the matrices have in the shaping of our memories? Or what
well,
parts? I mean,
life was determined by the matrix. It was a linear becoming, like, because remember the infinite being stood in a ball of mirrors. We've discussed this on our previous shows, and saw herself, because in the dream it was feminine, herself in lines of light going into eternity. It was the first time this conception of space came. And then the matrices were designed to explore those spaces. How it was is that each space had something that had to be learned during that space. And then the next space had something that had to be learned before that matrix would yield to the next. And in this way, we were moving linearly, creating linear time through linear space, and went into descension after ascension and so on. But it was the what had to be learned in that specific space that dictated at times what memories we would take. Because we took them for the sake of overcoming certain things so that they can yield their insights.
Okay. All right. Well, there was one more question, which actually a personal one, because it's been on my mind a lot for the past days. And that's about innocence. And we talked about that a little bit before recording started today. But I've been wondering how it's been possible that something as like innocence has been so fragile, and how come it's damaged so easily?
The interesting thing, if it is that perhaps how easily it can be damaged, is more a question of how small a thing it takes to damage it. Because think of a white, absolutely spotlessly white carpet throughout your room. The white carpet is the most pristine that that room's floor can look, but it's also going to be the one that shows up every little speck. The white light is innocence and purity. If you look at the red light, which is gratitude, it's not going to be damaged as quickly because it is already lacking in parts. When something is taken away from it or something is slightly distorted, it's going to be less potent and noticeable than if you have all light, all frequency, in absolute harmony, and now you have a wrong note. If somebody cannot play the piano very well and they make a lot of mistakes and you put one wrong note in there, it's very hard to notice because it was incomplete anyway. It's the nature of completeness.
Okay, but if you see how easily, if you take then the innocence or the white light, but you put a being which has that, and then put them in an environment of dissension, it seems to be pretty extreme, because it's bound to get damaged very quickly. And I was really wondering, in the sort of the perfect unfolding of things, what would be the design behind that? Because there's such a point of no return quality about damaging innocence.
You're onto something phenomenal, actually. It really phenomenal. Because Mother has just, as she was speaking to me also, okay, she said, no, it's not that innocence is fragile. Innocence is only fragile where duality exists. She says, now that duality doesn't exist, see, this morning, right before we went on the show, Mother decreed that there is no feminine and masculine. There is no separation anymore. When there is no separation, innocence is very potently strong because it's connected. Innocence is fragile where all around you things are in duality, and they make discordant tones when things are split, unless they're perfectly balancing, like love and trust, those emotional pairs. Unless that happens, you are constantly exposed to that which is discordant. And discordance is one of the quickest ways to disrupt innocence. A discordant tone pulls you out of the moment, and into linear time. And linear time is the arch enemy to purity and innocence. You know, unfortunately, folks, we've come to the end of another hour, and I've so enjoyed this hour with you, Ruchir. Really appreciate it. You do so much work to help assist everything that I do, and I'm very grateful. And thank you also to the masters. We love it when you contribute. And so with our next pre-record, please watch us on Twitter. We will let you know when it is. Have your questions ready. It makes Ruchir's day, too, because it provides us with diversity. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.